are now listening to Lower Road Radio.
Hey, welcome one and all to the number one podcast, winter, spring, and fall. Talking sports for the thrill of it all. Hey, talking life, but we're killing it all. Jason and Dan with the master plan. These are dangerous men with the mic in the hand. Ha! Bonafide winners everywhere that we go. You're a part of the team.
Lower Road Radio.
Dad life, good life, bright lights in sight. All right.
What?
Dad life, good life, bright lights in sight. All right.
Yeah.
Dad life, good life, bright lights in sight. All right.
What? Bonafide winners everywhere that we go. You're a part of the team.
Lower Road Radio.
Let's get it.
What?
At Tanagra when the walls fell, this is Dan Owings coming at you another time for Lower Road Radio with my co-host, as always, Jason. How you doing today?
It is a beautiful day.
Mm-hmm. It's a beautiful...
I don't know that.
It's a beautiful day.
Is that Queen?
It's U2, actually.
Same British...
No.
They're both British.
No, one is Irish.
United Kingdom.
Okay. I don't think you know the difference.
Just took the dog for a walk.
Yeah.
That was fun.
That's what you got?
Yeah, to start off with. I mean, we got a big show.
We do have a big show, and I was expecting to start it off in a way that it deserved to be started, which was big.
I just don't want to waste a lot of time.
You started off with, I took the dog for a walk.
I did take. I've got these. They're over there, but I've got these wireless earbuds.
What's the brand?
Sony.
1987 called it once it's headphone.
Stop.
Apparently, listen, I've had too much coffee today anyway. Well, yes. Too much caffeine in particular, because I happen to have found a seltzer water that is caffeinated.
Ooh.
That's not bad. I like that a lot.
Where'd you find it?
It's the AHA brand. The Coke brand.
Yeah.
They have two of their flavors have caffeine and electrolytes in them. And so you feel good.
I'm trying to eliminate caffeine out of my life.
Well, anyway, I had a decent amount of coffee.
Sorry. Reduce. I can't eliminate.
No.
I like coffee.
I had a more than usual coffee already this morning, and then I had two of those today, which it says it's not even one full cup of coffee's worth of caffeine. But then I had two of those, and now we decided to start the show off with coffee.
Yeah.
Because friend of the show and relation to me by marriage, my father-in-law, listener of the show.
You married your father-in-law?
Sent us... some coffee to try.
Yes, I'm drinking it right now.
He said it's his favorite kind of coffee, so you brought your hand grinder, because this is coffee beans.
Yes.
And we don't have a coffee grinder in the studio, because we just use the Colombian Costco coffee that's already ground. So
yes.
You brought your hand grinder.
I have three grinders.
Okay.
I have a hand grinder, manual, mm-hmm. crank. Mm-hmm. I have an official coffee grinder.
Okay.
It's just electric.
Sure,
spins it.
Sure.
And then I have the magic bullet.
And that works too?
Yes. The problem with the magic bullet is it makes it so fine. I mean,
it's like espresso.
Yes, it is thick, which is fine if that's what you're going for.
Sometimes.
I like it. Well, at work, that's how I drink it. It's super fine.
Well, I will say this coffee that is hand ground is a little bit coarser than I was expecting.
In my hand crank.
Yeah, the hand crank. So this might not be the best rollout, but the coffee, it says made in Montana, USA, and it's Terry's favorite, Hunter Bay Coffee Roasters, Big Sky Organic, the medium roast whole bean. It's organic coffee, Jason, and it's a big bag. It's a pound and a half of coffee,
Yeah,
of coffee.
I was going to guess three.
We hope you enjoy this world-class coffee from start to finish. From the nutty aroma of freshly ground beans to the anticipation of that first cup in the morning and every sip that follows. We believe this is the only way to satisfy your taste for an authentic, delicious experience. Thank you for supporting our craft, for preparing coffee the way it ought to be made, roasted and ground fresh without sacrificing quality for the convenience of coffee pods or instant powders. Thank you. I like that because it's a little pretentious, just like me. And I approve of the coffee. I would like to grind it a little finer.
A little finer.
For the sake of what we did. But
I will say though, it is a pleasant.
It's very smooth.
Yes,
it's
very
not
smooth.
Bitter at all.
No,
no not bitterness. At all. Not a hint of bitterness.
I like bitter coffee.
Well, it has its place.
I mean, not exclusively.
You like bitter coffee.
I like all forms of coffee. I like it when it's bitter. Also, like it when it's mellow. I like coffee in multiple varieties.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I'm in my first cup. I'm almost done with my first cup, and I might just get more when I'm done.
By the way, the way to drink coffee,
yeah,
when you are not in your home, if you don't have a carry cup,
reusable
cup,
right?
We have to use a paper cup.
Paper cup.
You cannot use styrofoam.
Listen, I won't drink coffee out of a styrofoam cup. I won't.
I refuse.
Do it. And people might say that I'm crazy, but I can taste it. There is a taste difference when I'm drinking from styrofoam.
Yep. And that's not pretentious.
No,
this is
reality.
Real life. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Dunkin' Donuts, which Marion, Ohio is going to be a proud owner of Dunkin' Donuts.
I am so excited for this.
For the longest time, the one knock against Dunkin' Donuts that I had was their coffee was in
a styrofoam
cup.
Yeah.
But then I found out that you could ask for it in a paper cup.
Ooh.
And then they would do that. So I started to do that. But then recently, I think company-wide, they've gotten rid of styrofoam and they're only doing paper cups now. So I am excited about that. I'm very happy about that.
So on a scale of 1 to 100, what would you rank this coffee?
100 being the best cup I ever had in my life.
Correct.
What is the best cup of coffee you've ever had in your life?
I don't know.
Mine is probably a coffee from, it was an Americano that I had in Washington, the state of Washington, about like an hour north of Seattle at this little place in the middle of nowhere. And it was an amazing cup of coffee. So that was probably mine.
I will say this. I know my worst cup of coffee for sure.
Well,
it was instant coffee and we were camping.
Yeah.
Instant
coffee is not coffee. It's coffee flavored, but it's not coffee.
It was the worst cup of coffee I ever had.
Yeah.
My best cup, now that I think about it, over here at the Main Squeeze, they do a concentrated coffee, and then they pour hot water in it.
I'm aware
how
they do it.
Very smooth, very nice.
That's your best cup of coffee.
Yes.
I mean, I'm a fan of the Main Squeeze. I'm not saying I don't like their coffee there.
Listen, the one day I had
to call it,
I've only had it once.
Yeah.
So if I went a second time, maybe not as good.
Here's what I'll say. And once again, I promote the Main Squeeze here in Marion. If you're in Marion, Ohio, go get a smoothie at the Main Squeeze. Go get some coffee at the Main Squeeze. But I will say, the way they do their coffee does lend itself to variabilities within the mix. Like, depending on who's giving it to you, how dense their original brew is, how much water they put in. I've gotten a variety of coffees. So I've gotten very good coffee there and fine coffee.
I'll tell you, the one cup I had was excellent. I'm eating an oatmeal cream pie, by the way.
You are.
It offsets the coffee tremendously.
Yeah, I don't like sugar in my coffee, but sugar with my coffee?
Come on. What are we talking about?
Come on.
Okay, Mount Rushmore of things to eat with coffee.
Mount Rushmore of things to eat with coffee. Donut is your George Washington.
Come on.
What are we talking about? I would say pie. Like, for me, apple pie and coffee is just a tremendous
Does
mixture.
It get better?
Well, you know, I went at a la mode, obviously.
Come on.
Okay, so we can say apple pie, a la mode, donuts.
Vanilla ice cream?
Just vanilla ice cream and coffee?
Yeah.
Back and forth?
Yeah.
I don't know that it belongs. I feel like it needs to be.
I've had it.
Well, listen, I wouldn't turn it down. If you had vanilla ice cream for me right now, I would take it. I'm not saying it's no good. I'm saying, does it belong in the Mount Rushmore? I'm not so sure.
Some type of biscuit?
Yes, this is where I'm getting at. I think some type of biscuit, and when I say biscuit,
the English biscuit.
I mean the English cookie biscuit. Just a standard butter cookie biscuit kind of a thing, you know?
Yeah, almost
nothing complicated.
What's the ones in the tin?
Yeah, Dansk or something like that.
Yeah.
That might not be what it is, but it's some sort of Danish cookie.
Yes.
Is what that is. It's a butter cookie. It comes in different shapes.
There's not much to it. It's pretty plain.
No, but it's very good with coffee.
Very good with coffee.
I feel like that belongs.
Absolutely. So are we going to refer to it as a biscuit?
We'll call it a biscuit.
Okay.
Yeah. But we know we're not talking about, you know, biscuits and gravy. Although, you know, give me some coffee with biscuits and gravy. I'm fine too. Nothing really savory though belongs on this list, right?
You know, I don't think so. But, you know, in the morning I do like, you know, bacon and eggs. with some coffee.
I rarely, if I'm having bacon and eggs for breakfast.
You want an orange juice.
Yeah, or a lot of times I'll drink a seltzer water, you know. And then I'll have the coffee, when I'm all done, then I'll have coffee. So I'm not sure that it belongs with that. It doesn't, I don't know how well it accentuates that. So what we know is donut, apple pie a la mode, biscuit, anything else?
I don't know. I feel like there's something very obvious that we're missing.
Cookies, cakes, pies. I just don't feel like ice cream. I just don't feel like I can go there with ice cream.
Cake?
Cake? Cake. This is a tough one. This is really tough. I guess, yeah, I don't know. I don't have birthday cake or any kind of cake and think, man, I need a, you know, I mean, I guess I would like coffee with it, but for me, it calls for a glass of milk more than it calls for a glass of coffee or a cup of coffee.
We can't have three on the Mount Rushmore. We have to have a fourth.
No, we have to have a fourth. That's a rule. We will not move on until we do a fourth.
What about a instant snack, like an oatmeal cream pie? Something that you would open up out of a box, out of a package?
Just say Little Debbie.
Little Debbie of any variety?
Mm-hmm.
What about the round, like the cinnamon sticky bun?
How about cinnamon rolls? Cinnamon rolls with coffee is pretty good.
That is pretty good.
And that's a different thing than a donut.
Correct.
You know, you got your butter and your icing on there. It's a different, I mean, it's in the donut family. For sure, but different for sure, too.
It's fried dough or baked dough in some variety.
It's baked where a donut is fried. So, okay, I'm very happy with this. Donut, apple pie a la mode, biscuit, cinnamon roll.
Perfect.
Man, and give me just a strong cup of coffee with that, and I'm good to go. It clears the palate so you can have more sweet things.
Right. Okay, so tonight.
We can come here just to talk about coffee.
Or maybe we did.
I don't know.
We actually did it. Tonight might be our biggest episode ever.
Very Montana themed all around, I think.
Okay, well, we might find that out.
Well,
I don't know.
We'll get into it.
We are interviewing.
Yes, we are.
Perhaps Ohio's top Bigfoot researcher.
You promised me the top.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the list. I told you she was, but I don't know that for sure.
Okay.
So I'm going to call her up right now. Her name is Amy.
And let me just say, this is not a joke. Like, we're not, like, sometimes we goof on the show. We do goof. This is not a joke. Like, she is legitimate.
Correct. Yeah. And, for the record, I believe in Bigfoot. You don't.
Yes. Does she know this?
Yeah, I told her.
I don't want to come across as rude, but, you know, if I don't believe, I don't believe. I'm a little nervous about it, to be honest with you.
Just don't be mean.
I don't like to offend people.
I know. Don't be mean on purpose, okay?
I won't be mean on purpose, but,
it just comes so natural. Actually, in a strange sort of way, the roles are reversed.
Mm-hmm.
Usually I'm the mean one.
Yeah. You normally are. That comes very natural to you. Here it is.
Hello.
Amy.
Hello.
This is Jason. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Jason?
Good. So you are recording right now, and we are a family-friendly show.
Okay.
So, I mean, I haven't spoke to you in real life. I'm assuming there won't be a lot of four-letter words, but... okay, good.
No, my mother would wash my mouth out with soap.
Perfect. Okay, so for the record, I don't know how to say your last name. Is it Boo?
It is, yes. It's Boo like a ghost.
Okay, see, that's what I thought. We were talking about it last week. Yeah. I said, what if it was Blue minus the L? Then it would be Boo.
Yeah.
But it could be Bo.
Right, it could be, or Bew, but I usually say it's spelled like Blue without the L, but it's Boo like a ghost.
Gotcha. Okay, so I'm with my brother, Dan.
How you doing, Amy?
Hi, Dan. Doing well.
Okay, so I did not preview you with the whole list in the bio, so tell us just a little bit about yourself. We know that you're a Bigfoot BFRO member, correct?
I used to be. I'm no longer with the BFRO.
Oh, is that controversial?
Well.
Okay, we'll get into it. Just tell us little bit about yourself.
It's fine. No, I did. I used to be one. I am a teacher. So right now I'm learning how to teach from home over the phone, which is a fun challenge.
Okay.
And I am definitely a Bigfoot enthusiast. I have been interested in it for about 8 years, I guess now. But I've always kind of liked anything that was a mystery or, you know, but we can talk later about why I got into it 8 years ago. But I do a lot with that. I am a mom to one beautiful 23-year-old daughter. I live in Youngstown, Ohio. I used to be a clown. I'm a writer and an editor. And I really like M&Ms. How's that?
I love it. Okay. So many questions.
There's other things, but we can talk about it.
Okay, so let me cue you up with where we're at, and then this might lead the discussion a little bit. So I have been a believer in Bigfoot my whole life.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Now, we're brothers, and we grew up in the same house. I don't know why we don't
same
believe
parents,
in Bigfoot.
Yeah, we shared a room, actually, unfortunately.
For many, many years, mm-hmm. 18 years.
Yeah.
And then we went to college, so another 2 or 3 years after that. So a long, long time. But I tend to be more of the paranormal, Bigfoot, aliens, you know, ghost, all the other stuff, right?
Right,
and
right.
My brother is a disbeliever in all of it. And so for the record, we've also said this. I believe in Bigfoot.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in ghosts.
Yes.
But I do not believe in the ghost of Bigfoot.
Which is strange to me to finally draw the line there.
Because I think there is a line there.
There is a line there. You know, people talk about that. They're like, because there's people that think of Bigfoot very differently. You know, I look at it more as a natural creature. I'm not saying I'm right. I don't know. And then I have friends who look at it more supernatural. So I'm like, well, maybe what you guys are seeing is the ghost of Bigfoot. Who knows?
Mm. That's my favorite line from that movie, The Men Who Stare at Goats.
Mm-hmm.
They're talking about the Lake Ness Monster. He's like, ghost of a dinosaur.
See, it could be. You never know.
Yeah. So here's how I think Bigfoot is an animal, a physical animal. And I tend to think that physical animals don't necessarily have ghosts. I think people have ghosts. So that's where I draw the line.
I understand. That makes sense to me. I look at it as a physical animal as well. I am in a group called the Olympic Project. They're based out of Washington State, and I'm out there as often as I can be. But they invited me to join them this past year and kind of start some things up out this way. And they definitely look at Bigfoot as a natural animal. And then I also head up a group that I co-founded called Project Zoo Book, where we work. There's Bigfoot researchers across the country that work with scientists looking into this. So I'm definitely on that, you know, flesh and blood side of the question. So that's how I look at it. But I'm not being wishy-washy, but there's like in the Bigfoot community, there's a lot of going back and forth and fighting about what is it. So yeah. I never say I don't have any kind of proof that I am right.
So Amy, I think the best place to start is the beginning. So you said this is an 8 year thing for you. So what is it that happened 8 years ago that kind of drew you into this world?
Well, I had heard of Bigfoot before. You know, I saw a movie when I was 8 years old or
Harry,
7 years.
Harry and the Hendersons?
No, not Harry and the Hendersons. I'm a little older than that.
Okay.
I did see that though, but I was seven. There was this movie called Sasquatch, The Legend of Bigfoot that came out and it scared me so bad. So I remember that vividly because it really frightened me. And then I did see Harry and the Hendersons and In Search Of and things like that. So I wasn't unfamiliar with the topic, but it wasn't something I was into or, you know, on my mind. But about 8 years ago, almost exactly 8 years ago, because it was on Palm Sunday. I mean, I know that calendar changes, you know, but it was in April of that year, I believe. You know how Palm Sunday and Easter change their dates. But anyway.
Yeah, that's another conspiracy right there.
Yeah. I go on like tangents where you could just rein me back in if I do. But anyway, I lived in Cleveland at the time. I was a passenger in a car. We were just in town in Youngstown, Ohio, to see my father, who was very ill, and he actually ended up passing away the next Sunday, which was Easter Sunday. And so I wasn't thinking about Bigfoot. I was kind of sad. You know, I knew he was sick and had gotten to see him. So I was a passenger in a car. My daughter was lying down in the back seat on her iPod, because that's what they had back then. And my ex-husband was driving. We drove over this, like, the municipal water supply. It's called Meander Reservoir outside of Youngstown, Ohio. And I've been over this bridge, I don't even know how many times in my life, many, many, many hundreds, if not thousands of times. And I've never seen a person out there, because it's the city's water supply. You're not allowed in there. It's all fenced off and it looks like a beautiful lake. So we're going over the bridge and I'm looking out the window. I saw these birds flying around on some old cement blocks out in the water. And it's a common thing, but I've never seen them as like, active. They were just flying all over the place off of this cement thing. And I look toward the shoreline and there was something standing there. So I'm staring at it. And at first, what went through my head was that it looked like Bigfoot. That's all I can say. It was very tall, you could tell, mm-hmm. very wide, all one color. And as the car got closer to it, it just kept looking more like that. And I'm in my head, I didn't say anything right away, because in my head I'm thinking, well, that's dumb. You know, like, what is it? Is it a really tall man? Is it a bear? The closest I got to it when our car was perpendicular to it was probably still about 100 yards. So like a football field. So I can't say for sure what this was. I can't, because it was far away, but it was, I know it was not a bear. It didn't have any muzzle. It was holding onto a tree and it turned. I am right after we passed by and you couldn't stop or anything. I'm like, I think I just saw Bigfoot. And so, you know,
yeah.
And back then I was like, I think I just saw Bigfoot, not a Bigfoot, because in my head there was only one and it lived out in California and it wasn't real, yeah. You know? So that's how I started into this. I started looking up online about Bigfoot because I thought it was the dumbest thing, like it couldn't possibly be that. There have been several sightings around the same area and they continue to this day.
So I've been through that area many times myself. We have friends in Warren, Ohio, and
yeah.
So I've driven through there a number of times. Was it on the concrete pad or was it on the shoreline?
It was on the shoreline, but it okay. was looking out. It seemed to be looking toward and facing toward where those birds were flying.
Gotcha.
So I think they were reacting to it. I don't know for sure, but that's what my
okay
perception.
So that's sighting number one. Has there been a physical sighting number two?
Possibly. I always say I do this a lot. I'm out in the woods as much as I can. I travel a lot, but I feel like I'm the world's worst Bigfooter because nothing usually happens. But I try, and I go out, I take other people's reports and I go out and they reenact things for me. But one other, there's like between that and 2012 and 2018, there were some things where I was out and like a log was thrown at us one time. Some people I was with, there were some rocks thrown. We heard some strange noises, but never anything visual until I was at an expedition in Southern Ohio in 2018 in the spring again. And I was helping out with it. It wasn't my expedition, but I was helping out. And myself and Lester, my fiance, and another couple were there the last night. We were going to leave. Lester and I were going to leave, but we were asked if we could just go out and sit with this other couple because they wanted to go. And I'm like, sure, we'll go. So the night before, I had been the person to lead a group through the forest on the other side of, a creek, I guess. It was like a stream that was in that cut. Like in half a big power line cut. So on one side there was a power line cut that came down to the stream, and then on the other side of the stream there's a power line cut that came down to the stream. So the night before I had been the one that took everybody, I don't even know how much of a distance, but we hiked through the forest to the where the open, you know, out into the open of the cut.
Right.
And this second night I was a seated group with a seated group of four of us on the other side, and we were waiting for people to come out, and we were playing around with the lady, she's my friend now, Monica, her husband, and she had a FLIR, like a FLIR scout, just the smallest one that you can have.
Right.
And we were playing around with it, looking around. We saw deer, which looked like deer. We looked at each other, we looked like people. Later on we were looking across that stream to the people when they finally did come out, you could tell they were people. You know, the Scout isn't the most advanced piece of equipment ever, but you can tell, you know, the heat signature is what it is usually.
Right.
So Jesse, her husband was sitting on the tailgate of his truck and we were kind of chatting quietly. It was misty, not really rainy, but misty rain. And a little bit before this happened, we had heard some footsteps, checked that out, couldn't see anything. We had smelled kind of a bad smell, checked that out, couldn't see anything or find anything. But we were just chatting and Jesse like almost hit his head. He jumped up off the tailgate where he was sitting and he's like, "You got to see this, Amy. You got to see this. You got to see this."
On the flare.
Yes. Yeah. So I'm like, what? And he's like, "You got to look at this." And I was like, no, because like, even if you're going bird watching, you don't want to move the binoculars or you might lose sight of it.
Right,
you know?
Right.
Well, he's like, "No, you have to see this." So he gave me his FLIR. I'm looking in it, expecting not to be able to find what it is. But right there was this object. And what was weird about it was he had his equipment. It was set to black hot instead of white hot.
Okay.
So I'm used to the opposite. So at first I was kind of like, what's going on? And the only other things you could really see, because this was in the middle of the night, were the bases of the power line, like the towers.
Right.
Because the rock or whatever they were made out of, concrete, had some residual heat in it. So you could see those glowing. And then you could see trees to the right, you know, that were there. But there was this something that was moving, going down the power line cut. And you could tell it was moving away from us because it was getting smaller. It was standing when I first saw it, or not standing, I guess it was walking, but it was right by the second base of the second tower.
Right.
So I'm looking at him like, what is that? And he and I would give it back and forth to each other every once in a while. We watched it go all the way down the path and over the embankment to get down to where that stream was, which I knew from being there in the daytime that that's not an easy thing to navigate.
Right.
But we were separated. It's kind of a long story, but I want to take up too much time with it. The other group finally came out. They didn't see it. They came back, didn't want me to go down after it, which I wanted to, because I'm kind of dumb that way. But I wanted to see if I could, you know, see more of it, but they're worried for our safety. So I waited, but they were there pretty quickly. They ran through the woods, got in their trucks and came around, but they separated Jesse and I right away. And we didn't talk to each other for 3 weeks. In the meantime, like right away, we went back. We had already taken our tent and everything down. So got a hotel room. I wrote down exactly what happened. I drew a picture. Jesse did the same thing. And then when we got together, they perfectly pretty much matched up.
Right.
You know, they just didn't want us to cloud each other's judgment or memory. And in the after this happened, some of the guys went down to where we said it was standing. And one of the guys is a friend of mine called Kevin, and we call him Big Kevin because he's about 6'9".
Okay.
Wow. And yeah, we had Lester stand where it was, and I'm like, "Honey, get back up there." It like kind of scared me. And then when Kevin went down there, and they were like holding up two fingers. Could we tell how many people were there? And we passed like all of their little tests. But when Kevin got to the point where we had first seen this thing for the first time, hopefully the last time in my life, I had to grab Jesse because my knees buckled a little bit because I was really shocked at how small he looked.
Right. So that means whatever you saw previously was huge.
Was huge, and it was definitely vertical.
Right.
You know, but
and the FLIR didn't have a recorder on it.
You know what? We found out later. I'm like the cheapest Bigfooter ever. I finally have a few pieces of equipment, but I never had anything like that before. And they had just gotten it, so they didn't know they could have recorded it.
Oh, gosh.
You know? And I know it's like the same old story. And in the midst of like the excitement of looking at it, it was the last thing I thought about, which, see, I told you I'm the worst Bigfooter ever, but but it did have a recorder. But one thing was interesting, but it didn't have any way of, what word am I looking for? Like zooming in.
Right.
And so where Kevin was standing and it had been we both had a good feel for how big this thing had been. And so it was
7 or 8 feet had to be huge.
At least, yeah. So, it was really tall.
So what is it that, I mean, so 8 years ago, you see this thing in Youngstown, and then you begin to obviously kind of like investigate the world of Bigfoot on the internet, and you start to realize, well, maybe this thing is something, you know, like for real. You know, I guess what's interesting to me is that, where's the passion come from? You know what I mean? Cause it's like, it seems to me from where I'm standing, and we've just met on the, you know, phone. So, but it seems to me that this is a large part of your identity, you know?
It is. And it really is.
Yeah. So are you just that kind of like, are you the kind of person that like just throws yourself completely into things, or like, this is me now? Or like, what is it about Bigfoot that like had this all kind of consuming, you know, is it maybe partially, I mean, are there other things involved? Like you just, I mean,
so like the question, like kind of follow up with that is it proving, like if you can prove he's real, then you can prove that you're not crazy.
Part of it is that for myself, I don't care if other people think I'm crazy. I mean, I have relatives that think I'm crazy. Half my students think I'm crazy. You know? I don't care. So I'm not like affected by that. But to myself, because I, you know, I'll still, whatever that was that I saw in 2012 has affected my life greatly, because there I was, just a normal, semi-normal maybe person, you know, and here this is what I do. And to answer your question about, is that the type of person I am? Not necessarily. Like even going back to when I was a little kid, like I'd be like, oh, I'm going to start this club and I'm going to do this and this. And I get really excited and then I kind of fizzle out. Mm-hmm. You know, if it's something like my work as a teacher, whatever, I put all my all into it. But, you know, I have a lot of half finished projects.
Right, right.
But this has been so compelling to me. And I had no idea that there was as much evidence as there is out there. And I think what keeps me going the most is my Project Zoo book, number one, because it is so fascinating what we talk about. And number two, which probably should be number one, but are other witnesses that I talk to. My research partner, Tina Sams, and I, this year and last year, we've been going to some different like outdoor shows, like hunting and fisherman shows. Mm-hmm. And this year we went to one in Monroeville and one in Girard before, you know, the virus came about. And we have so many people that will stop and talk to us. And, you know, even if you throw out 95% of them, which I don't, but say you did, you know, people are hoaxing, people have misidentification. It's harder to say misidentification when you're talking to hunters.
Right.
You know, they know what a bear looks like. They know what these animals look like. I had one witness that Tina and I followed up on, and he was a wildlife exterminator. He knows his animals. And, you know, when grown men come to you and they're shaken by what they're telling you, one guy said, you know, that hunting was his love. And every day, like the first day of deer season was Christmas for him, and he won't go in the woods anymore. He won't go do it anymore because of what he saw.
How many of those do you think go unreported?
Oh, a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. You know, when I was in the BFRO, I took a lot of reports in Ohio and especially in Pennsylvania. You know, I live right on the border of PA, and I grew up going out to the Allegheny National Forest. So I do a lot out there. But the first time I did one of the outdoor shows, I was crawling around on the floor, like duct taping down this carpet for my table to go on and stuff. And I looked up, and this was the night before it started, and there were five guys standing there waiting to tell me their stories. And they were just other vendors, you know?
Right.
I mean, I don't vend anything. I'm just there to, you know, I have some stickers and stuff, but I'm just there to get stories. And there were people that would like come by the table, kind of like, haha, at you, then come back when their buddies were gone and tell us their story.
Right.
So I think there's a lot out there. We got 70, what is it? I wrote it down before, 76, I think, stories. Now, whether all of them are true, and some of them are older, like things they saw when they were younger,
right.
You know, but 76 stories, I think it was, that have never been told to anyone officially.
So I want to get into some TV stuff here, but before I do, I want to tell you the one story, one example that I had.
Okay.
So I'm have been a youth pastor for many, many years. I've taken large groups of teenagers out in the woods. We've done some day trips and we've done some overnight, you know, two or three night type of things. I took a group of kids down to Wayne National Forest. And down in Wayne National Forest, you can camp anywhere. You don't have to camp on a campsite.
Right.
And so we found, I found a little trailhead where we can park and had a, you know, like a porta potty bathroom type of thing. You know, I have teenagers with me, so I want them to have access to a bathroom if they have to.
Right.
But this is not a campground. I mean, it was like a horse trail. And
yeah.
we hiked in 2 or 3 miles. We hopped up off the trail another, you know, 100 yards or so and set up camp. And I told the kids, I mean, as soon as we got there, I said, go have fun. Be back here before dinner. So
right.
the all kids scatter out. My daughter's one of them. She was 14 at the time. And she calls me on the phone. So the cell phone service was very spotty. But she calls me on the phone. She's like, you got to come down to the creek. And I'm like, I'm setting up camp. Literally, we hadn't set anything up yet. And she goes, no, you got to come right now. So I came. And in the creek, there's no people. There's no people.
Right.
This is not a campground. This is not.
Right.
It's not even a hiking trail. And they're down by this creek, and there's a footprint.
Wow.
I mean,
yeah.
on in this creek bed. And we're looking around. There's no before, and there's no after. It was just one single print. And
right.
I'm looking at all the kids. We had just got there. None of the kids took their shoe. It was a huge print. None of the kids took their shoe off. None of the kids faked it. They were, and my daughter was one of them. She was just incredibly impressed that, like, literally the first time she's been out, she sees a footprint.
That's cool.
We took a picture of it, and it's on Instagram somewhere. And you can see the five toes, and you can see the foot. And it was probably 14 inches. I mean, it was decent size.
Yeah.
And later that evening, around midnight, me and the other adult, we carried all the food back to the van. So 2 or 3 miles back, it's bear country, and we didn't want food in our campground.
Right.
So we carry it back to the van and lock it up. And when we get back, my daughter's freaking out again. And she's very calm and collected. And she's like, were you guys outside our tent growling? And I said, no. She goes, no, tell me right now. Were you? I said, we were back at the van. We were like 3 miles away. And she goes, something was growling outside of our tent. And so once again, it could have been a bear. It could have been some coyote or something. I don't know. But, you know, that one experience, my daughter, and I know her very well. She doesn't make up stories. She's not a liar. She has no incentive to do any of this stuff. And we're not publicists. We're not trying to make money on it. We're just having fun.
Right.
And so we saw a footprint and we heard growling in the same trip. And it was, you know, I'll send it on a map where we were and you can someday take a look at it. But it was a crazy, crazy experience.
Yeah. You know, a lot of times, you know, you go out and I think those kind of experiences are important. That was one of the things I kind of disagreed with my old organization. Usually we would only keep track of sightings.
Right.
And I feel like it's important, and not that they wouldn't look for tracks and everything like that. I don't mean that, but sounds, just people's feelings, even in an area, obviously tracks. I feel like you need to let that out into the public too, because it gives the area a story. You put it all together. You know, if you guys wouldn't have seen that track, or she wouldn't have found that track, the growling wouldn't have been as interesting, maybe still scary, you know, whatever it
right.
is.
You connect the two and it's something.
Yeah, I agree. So that's really cool.
Yeah.
I like that story. And so, I do go out and we hear things. And I was in Oregon last summer with a few friends and in the Olympic project with me. And we heard a lot of weird noises. And and even when we were sleeping or away from our area, we had a perimeter of long duration recorders that were catching all of these weird knocks and yells and stuff. And like you said, we were in the middle of nowhere. The whole time we were there, we saw two people that came through on a through trail together, but we drove forever to get to a trailhead, backpacked in, you know, we were out on this little lake with our tents and, you know, there was nobody there and
so
all this stuff was going on.
I'm assuming you've seen all the TV stuff, right?
Sure.
So
yeah.
a couple things that fascinate me, and I'm just curious to get a little feedback. There's on the Monster Quest one in the first season, and then they follow up. Jeff Meldrum was one of the guys that was up there. They have that cabin in Canada on a lake where they have to fly in. There's no roads
right.
and anything.
Right.
In this cabin, I mean, they're standing around and rocks are being thrown at it. Yes. Off season, the insulation was ripped out and they had the nail board that something stepped on.
The nail, yeah, with the hair was on it. Yeah, I know exactly which one.
That has to be Bigfoot, right?
I feel like it does. I feel like it does because what else throws rocks?
Yeah, nothing. Nothing throws rocks.
Unless you can, like, for example, the time that the, like, tree log stump was thrown in at some of us. You know, the skeptical part of me was thinking, okay, we were in a wildlife area. You had to have permission to get in there. But I'm like, well, somebody gave us the permit. Maybe they're joking around with us. But when I really think about it, they would not have known when we were going to be at this particular spot. I don't think a human could have thrown this thing as far as it was thrown.
And who'd be stupid enough, because half these Bigfooters, they have guns. I was just going to say that. For myself, I'm going to take a gun with me because you're out in the wild. Right. I mean, even if it's a bear, if you've got people with you, especially people that can't take care of themselves, you want to protect them.
Right. And I feel like, you know, I always feel like you should be skeptical. You should think about anything else it could be. That's another reason I love this. I always used to love reading Sherlock Holmes stories. And the way he went about things was to figure out everything that could be the answer. And when he proved it wasn't any of those things, you're left with the truth. Right. And it's kind of like the same thing with Bigfoot. A lot of times, you know, I get sent a lot of audio clips. Usually I can tell them what it is. You know, I don't know every animal there is, but I've taught myself and I have a database I look in for animal sounds. I went to school to take classes from Ohio State University to become a certified volunteer naturalist in Ohio, just so I could get more of a background in what isn't Bigfoot, so I could be left with things that maybe are.
So, you know? So the other TV series that's a little bit newer is the Finding Bigfoot with, you know, Cliff and Renee and all them. I love that. But tell me this. I mean, from the bottom of, I mean, tell me the truth. Do you think there's a lot of stuff in there that is kind of added to, because every time they go out, they find something that can't happen, right?
Well, I feel like I really like those guys. I don't think that they lied about things. I really don't. But I think that they do. I have proof of that one way or the other. No, I wasn't.
At a certain point, like tree knocking or coyotes that might sound like a howl or something. I mean, I feel like they're so optimistic about anything that they find that it's like, that's gotta be Bigfoot.
Well, I personally don't think they were lying about things, but I don't think they were necessarily right all the time that it was Bigfoot.
Right. Okay. So, and then the newest one that just came out, on the Travel Channel, and I can't remember the name of it now.
Expedition Bigfoot.
Yes, up in Oregon, undisclosed location, right? 100% that's a Bigfoot there, correct?
I don't know.
Where it's walking and it steps over a log?
That was very interesting. I don't know if everything that they found was, I know those guys, and so I have to be honest about that. I know them. A couple of them are friends of mine, you know. Okay.
So they're not making stuff up either, are they?
I don't think so. I think whenever you have a TV show, it's for entertainment.
Right.
You're not in control of what the producers are doing. So I feel like, you know, they probably
potentially the producers could be doing like the gifting, the marble that was left on the stump or whatever.
Yeah, that was interesting.
Like, is that the producers planting something or is that?
I don't know. I don't know the producers, so I can't say that, but it could be. I just feel like I was part of a documentary. It's not out yet, but we filmed it in Stevens County, Washington last year. And none of what we did, we were never making anything up or saying it was something that it wasn't. But there were times when, like, I'm trying to think of a good example. Like, if pretend I heard something and I'm like, oh my gosh, did you hear that?
Right.
And the cameraman didn't get it on camera. Right. So he'd have us redo it. Like, oh my gosh. And I know, like, I am not so much looking forward to seeing myself because I'm not an actor. So I'll be like, oh my gosh, you know, but so it wasn't, I wasn't lying about it. I was just redoing it sometimes.
Right. I got you.
That makes sense. So, you know, I don't know. You know, there is a lot of controversy about Expedition Bigfoot because Bigfoot purists, I guess, researcher purists didn't like it if things were, you know, done differently because of the production.
Right.
My point of view is it's entertainment. It's not like they're doing a National Geographic documentary.
Yeah, I eat all that stuff up. I mean, if it's Bigfoot and it's on TV, I'm watching it. And so I like the production value of that one. That was, it was fun to watch. And cliffhanger after every episode, it was good.
How much of this do you think is kind of, I don't know, pushed forward, or how much of it grows in the telling because of it seems to me that the Bigfoot community is very fun. It seems to me to be like accepting, like just a good group of people to be a part of, like a fun thing to do. Like, how much of it do you think is just people finding acceptance in a group in which, you know, they're like, they just like the fun of it and the, like the friendships, and you see what I'm saying?
Like a social club.
Well, I do. I think a lot of it is that, and I'll tell you what, the Bigfoot community, somebody needs to write a book just about the Bigfoot community, let alone Bigfoot. It is bigger than you think. There are so many different groups. And while I agree with you, I have met some of the best people, the best friends I've ever had in the Bigfoot community. People that I know, like, I trust with my life, literally, you know, if we're out remote camping and stuff. I've also met some of the worst people I've ever met in my life. It depends on people's reason for being in it. I won't do it anymore if I don't find it fun anymore.
Right.
And I am out there doing this purely because I love the topic and I have a lot of fun and I have found camaraderie with it. You know, I do podcasts like this, different things like this. Basically, you know, I don't care to, I've heard my own story a million times, right? I do it because I like to meet new people like yourselves. And I also do it because a lot of times when I do a podcast or, you know, an interview, I will get a new scientist or somebody interested that will contact me.
Oh, and we don't have scientists that listen to this show.
Not at all.
I don't know. You never know.
No, we've been pretty offensive. We've been pretty offensive towards the scientific community in general.
Okay. So tell me this. This.
Saying, like, I do it, I'm not like, look at me, I'm so great. It's sure. It's because I do have fun. But man, I always tell people, if you start getting in the Bigfoot community, be careful, because there are some backstabbing people.
Yeah.
You know, I am a pretty mild mannered teacher, and I get along with about anybody in the world. I'm friends with my ex-husband, but there have been some people who have been not so great to me,
like the BFRO.
No.
Let's get into it. Amy, on the other line, we have the president of the BFRO. Here he is.
Jim, go ahead.
I will say there are some people that are in the BFRO, yes. But most of the people I know personally in the BFRO are very good people and very good researchers. There were a few, it had nothing to do with them being in the BFRO. They were just not very nice people.
Okay,
so
this is, I'm quite curious about this, and you don't have to tell me your personal views, but in general, in the Bigfoot community, are these people conservative or liberal politically?
Oh gosh, you have.
I'm just curious because this.
I would say overall, personally, I'd probably say conservative.
Okay.
But you have both. You have both in there. But okay. I'd say pro-conservative.
Heavy conservative. I like that. I'm an ultra conservative.
Mm. Okay.
So, I mean, that makes me feel good. I like that.
Yeah.
I just feel like those people are more honest.
Honestly, and there are really good people. I would just say be careful, because people fight about, you know, this is my prop, this is where I go, this is my spot.
Right,
they fight about,
right.
I have better evidence than you. So if you just stay away from that and just be a good person, you're going to have fun.
So here's my thing, Amy, not that anybody gives a crap whether I believe in anything or not, you know what I mean? Who cares? But, so I am, skeptical, just cause I feel like so many people, smart people, have done a lot of research and a lot of hard work. And, just to me, there's just been nothing that I can really grab onto that really gives me, you know, I know that I don't want to come across as offensive, but that's, I've just,
not,
yeah, I just, I'm looking for the dead body, you know, and I just,
I get
you know,
it.
But, Or the live body would be fine, too. Body. That might be better.
You immediately go to dead.
It's got to be dead.
I want to find one that died peacefully in its sleep.
Yes.
That's
yes.
my goal. Mm-hmm.
So, but that being said, I will say, it's not like I'm offensive towards those people. I don't think they're stupid or anything like that. I would say that it's harder for me to believe in a big foot around here in Ohio than it is. So I lived for 7 years. I lived in Montana, and until I lived there, I didn't quite understand what a wide open space meant. You know,
right.
So the thought that somewhere in Canada, you know, there's a community of something that we've never seen before, because literally no one has ever set foot like within 100 miles of that area. To me, that seems realistic, but Ohio seems so populated and so, I know that there's big areas like Wayne National Forest and other things like that. It's just harder for me. It's just harder for me to believe in Ohio than maybe get me to Montana, Canada, Alaska. I'm starting to give a little bit more freedom.
Right.
You know.
No, I get it. I absolutely get it. I think you should be skeptical about it unless you have a reason not to be, or unless you look into it. But I'll tell you one thing. First of all, I agree with you. When I go out to the Olympic National Forest, it is very easy to believe that there's something you haven't seen. Mm-hmm. You know, there are, what I heard was there were like 50 to 60 something small aircraft that are missing in that forest that nobody's been able mm-hmm. to find. And yet Shane Corson, one of my team members in the Olympic project, he talked about how we're looking for a moving target, you know, mm-hmm.
that doesn't want to be found.
Right, that doesn't want to be found. So that's fine. And I agree with you. In Ohio and Pennsylvania, even though I've experienced things, it's harder to believe. But if you go down, like I'm in Columbiana County a lot, and you have the Beaver Creek State Forest, and on the other side of Little Beaver Creek, it isn't too far away that you run into Pennsylvania and the Allegheny foothills and then the Alleghenies. And, you know, I'll go there and I'll go remote camping, travel around in that forest, and I never see another person in places that I am. So I still, you know, I get so many reports. I can't deny that people at least are thinking they're seeing something. Yeah. But I hear what you're saying.
There is something that really bothers me about the person that would say about Bigfoot or anything, like, no, it can't exist. It's just that there's such an arrogance to that statement, you know, that really does.
It is impossible for a Bigfoot to exist.
Yeah, like, oh, I'm sorry, you've been everywhere and seen everything. I guess I didn't realize that I was talking to God, you know, like.
Right.
So there is something about that arrogance that bothers me. You know, so I guess, you know, even myself, I mean, I wouldn't say like that
you just want more proof.
I just want a little bit more before I'm willing to jump in.
So like,
go ahead.
The Josh Gates, back in his, previous, not his current series, but the previous one, Destination Truth.
Right.
He goes out to, Yeti country,
Nepal,
right? He comes back with DNA evidence that was tested down in Texas that came back as a unknown primate.
Right.
Right. And so it's got to be a monkey of some variety, or ape, or human, or something. Right. But it's just not known.
Like, yeah.
So how is that? I mean, to me, that's proof that there is a primate
right.
of some variety living that we don't know, because it's not known. It doesn't come across. That's DNA evidence. To
right.
me, that alone. Now, that doesn't say 100% it is Yeti or Bigfoot or whatever you want to call
right.
them.
Yeah, you got to give it that, but you need to follow the evidence where it leads. And if it leads to there is something, then there is something. You know, if it doesn't, then don't. You can't. You got to be open-minded, but you got to,
so,
you know, not be stupid about it.
So my gut says that I think that Gigantopithecus, what they have on record, you know, big 7 foot, 8 foot tall ape-like creature. I think that is probably Bigfoot.
I think for sure that it could be. That's my theory
They say that was 10,000 years ago. And you know, that's not that long ago.
It's not. It's really not that long ago.
Not when they have dinosaur bones of millions of years ago. And
And if you look at like the Cross River gorillas, it wasn't until this century that we finally got them on film.
Right.
You know, the even mountain gorillas, Western lowland gorillas, the billy ape.
That's 50, 60 years, right?
Right. They were cryptids. They were not supposed to be real. They were supposed to be mythological. So, you know, another thing is you look at all of our Native American stories. Almost every tribe has one about Bigfoot, although they call it different names. And
right.
when the Cross River gorillas were over there, the natives were saying they were real, but Western scientists didn't want to believe it. And here we are. We have them in zoos now, for better or worse. You know, they're real creatures. And same with all of those great apes. But I wish, you know, sometime you guys should join in on one of the Project Zoo Book conference calls, because we have a lot of conference calls because we're all over the United States. But every time we've had a new scientist, and at this point we have anthropologists, primatologists, zoologists, biologists, every one of them who has joined us, you know, and we'll talk to people like Dr. Meldrum or Dr. Maria Mayor, who's on Expedition Bigfoot, and they'll come in and talk with us. Every one of them has said, I had no idea how much was going on with research, how much was going on with research to take things seriously and do things scientifically. They didn't know.
Right.
And none of them have left. They've all wanted to stay in the group. So, you know, have you ever heard of the Olympic Project?
You know, I haven't. And I don't research a lot of that stuff, but I watch everything on TV. Has there been a documentary or TV thing about it?
They're not in this for fame and glory and stuff like that. They are serious researchers. These guys, a lot of them are search and rescue guys as well out in Washington. And I was so thrilled to be asked to be a part of them. You have no idea. It's like, I told my mom, who loves to sing, I'm like, it's like if you get to go to Carnegie Hall or something. That's what I felt like.
It's a big deal.
But, I admire them so much, but they are doing a lot of scientific things out there. They, and Shane, who is one of the head guys in the Olympic Project, is also in Project Zoo Book. So we kind of work together a lot now. And, I keep saying, I tell my students not to do that. Sorry.
what do you teach?
Reading and English. I teach right now. I've been teaching first through eighth grade with intervention for reading.
Okay.
So,
you should probably stand the line and help Jason a little bit afterwards.
Okay, I will.
Okay,
but
so
these guys, it's such a cool project, but in a nutshell, there was a surveyor from a logging company who found some ground nests out in the Olympic National Forest. He tells his boss they were going to clear cut this area. And they were bringing different people in to try to figure out what made these nests, because they can't just destroy them or they get in trouble. So they brought in a bear specialist. They brought in a wood rat specialist, the Department of Natural Resources, and nobody could figure this out. And he finally remembered, I'm paraphrasing, but the guy who did his landscaping had a Bigfoot sticker on his truck, and he contacts him. So flash forward, now there's this group called the Olympic Project looking into these nests. The logging company gave them about 5 years to be able to try to figure out what these are. And currently we're still doing DNA testing, eDNA, a lot of audio stuff is out there. Cliff has been out there. He works with them a lot.
So,
Dr. Meldrum.
So the nest, it's branches put together?
Well, what it is you go down there. I've been out there with two of my primate zoologists, and it's a very secluded location. You have to be able to get behind these. To get in with a vehicle, you have to be able to get behind these gates, and then you drive and drive and drive forever because it's their property. It's the logging company's property. So I forget what question you just asked me.
What's the nest made of? Yeah.
The nest. It's all big. It's a big, huge collection of huckleberry bushes. But when you say bushes, these things grow really tall. And whatever made these nests, some of them are about 8 foot diameter. They're on the ground, but they have support like from some different branches that kind of lifts them up a bit, and they're manipulated. Like Dr. Meldrum was one of the first people that went out to see them, and it's not woven like a braid, but they are definitely manipulated to
interwoven,
turn the right. Interwoven, right. Right. And nobody can figure out what made these, but I'll tell you what, when I went there with those two primate zoologists, they worked with chimpanzees and gorillas and macaques and all of these animals. When we went in there and they came back up out of the area, they were absolutely flabbergasted. They were like, these look like nests that our charges make, you know. And what's interesting is all of the nests are on what they call finger ledges out there. So if you hold your finger out or your hand out flat with your fingers apart, there would be a nest like at the tip of each finger, and they would have sight lines to each other. There was they were up on top of a embankment where down at the bottom was this salmon river where the salmon would come.
Right, right.
And you have the food sources from the huckleberries themselves. There's just so much. I could talk about that for an hour. But there is a lot of science going on in Bigfooting, that even just the footprint evidence itself. You know, you have dermal ridges on these footprints and some of them that are somebody's fingerprint or footprint. You know, they can't be faked so easily. Right. Another guy we work with, he's a professor at North Carolina State University, and he gave an assignment to his, he gave an assignment to his class of honors engineering students who were to try to come up with a Bigfoot print that could fake out Cliff Berrickman, and they couldn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Like they had a hard time doing a good job of that. So, you know, when you get into the nitty gritty of it and you talk to people and witnesses who, you know, again, are like shaking over what they've seen, you look at the footprint evidence, you look at these nests, you look at all kinds of stuff, it's not as crazy as it sounds anymore.
Well, I'm sold. I mean, I always have been sold, but it's my brother that you have to end up selling it to.
He's okay.
I'm ready to believe, you know.
Well, to me, ultimately it comes down, we'll wrap it up with this, but ultimately for me, it comes down to if somebody says, a credible witness, that they saw them or him or whatever, I believe it. And it doesn't matter what it is. You know, if you said you experienced something, and it could be, you know, somebody out in Africa. And
except a Bigfoot ghost. That's where
line. I have to draw a line somewhere. Okay. I draw it there.
But, I don't always believe everybody, but I try to give people the benefit of the doubt.
But ultimately, you hear a million stories. If one of them is true, then they potentially all could be
That's
true.
That's all you need. That's all you need is one of them to be true.
Right.
Exactly.
So, okay. So, Dan, do you have anything else before we wrap it up here?
No. I'm happy to meet you, Amy. I'm glad that you're enjoying what you're doing. And I hope that you are the one that gets a selfie with Bigfoot.
Thank you. Me too. Mm-hmm.
So we end every show with a Netflix suggestion of the week. And so
which doesn't have to be Netflix. It's just the song that we sang at the beginning, which we're about ready to play, is the intro music.
Right.
So
enjoy the music, and then we'll get into the Netflix suggestion.
Bear with us through this music.
Netflix, watch these shows with us. Netflix, or maybe Hulu Plus. Netflix, watch these shows with us. Netflix, or maybe Hulu Plus. Or maybe Amazon Prime or something like that, like YouTube. We don't want to put a box around what you watch, so you never know.
You like that, don't you?
I'm going to be up all night singing that in my head.
It's an original, so you know, don't use it anywhere else.
And
you
know, it's recorded on the first take, believe it or not.
Believe it or not, that such quality could be a one-take thing.
funny.
It's pretty much the best thing on the show.
Yeah, yeah. So
that
Jason,
is awesome.
Jason, what is? It was the best thing on the show till Amy. Till Amy came. Yeah. So Jason, what is your Netflix suggestion?
Okay,
of the week?
My Netflix suggestion of the week is actually found on Netflix this time.
Okay.
Tiger King.
Oh,
listen,
my gosh.
Listen.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen.
I'm
Amy, have you seen
that.
It? Are you watching it now?
I'm on like episode 4.
Oh, my gosh.
My
I can't do it.
You got
it's
to
crazy.
Watch it.
It is crazy.
It's crazy.
It is.
Now, here's
I
the thing.
Wasn't going to watch it, but my friends kept telling me, I'm like, okay, I'll watch it. And I am hooked.
So I lived in Oklahoma for 4 or 5 years recently, just a couple years ago. I lived there when all that stuff was happening. I was like 30 miles from there.
Wow.
Like
wow.
A quick car ride, I would have been there. I wish I would have went. We saw billboards of the guy, and we thought he was crazy, but we didn't know him. We didn't. There was no,
right.
You know, nothing going on about him, but I wish I would have went now.
I think
holy
you should
cow.
Run for president again.
I mean, you know.
So that was funny. I'm teasing,
he got
14%
of the libertarian vote. Oh, he got 14% of the libertarian vote.
That's a lot.
How is that possible? But it's insane. Okay, so tell me this. Did Carol kill her husband?
Well, don't sue me, Carol, but and her husband, whatever his name was.
Don.
No, I think she did.
I think she did too. She is. They're all crazy. There's like three main characters. Actually, four. The most credible person is actually the guy that they patterned the movie Scarface after.
Yeah,
he's a cocaine dealer and a Tiger King himself.
It's just the best. And I don't know.
It's a train wreck, but it like to me, it's like it's must watch TV. Now it's not family friendly.
No, it's not.
I did not watch it with my kids. I watched it, you know, my wife and I watched it, but did not let the kids watch it.
Here's what I knew about Tiger King the moment I saw like a preview for it on Netflix is that you would love it.
Yes,
the moment I
yes.
saw it, I said, Jason's got to watch this. I still haven't hit the point at
rock
which,
bottom.
Yeah, I got other things that I'm watching right now. So, you know,
you're gonna like it.
Well,
like, I didn't.
You know,
gonna like. It.
Can I tell you? That's what I'm afraid of. I'm quite sure it's been number one on Netflix for like the last week or whatever. I'm quite sure that it's compelling. I have no doubt about that.
It is.
Once you
it
get
is.
Into the memes on Facebook, mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, that's a whole new world.
Okay. Yes. All right. Well, my Netflix suggestion of the week is not Tiger King. So. Technically, this thing, I've been watching it on Amazon, but it's because Amazon was offering a 30-day free trial for CBS All Access.
So this is CBS All Access.
So it's CBS All Access through Amazon because of their 30-day free trial, and it's Picard. And I've watched like the first like three episodes. Well, I love Jean-Luc Picard. He's the best Star Trek captain of all time.
Shut up.
Is he in it? I haven't even heard of this. Is he in it?
Yeah,
yeah.
It stars Patrick Stewart. It's 10 episodes the first season. And now, I mean, I've watched the first three, I think, maybe four.
How many are there?
10
okay.
in the first season. And he is, you know, aged and a lot of stuff has happened in the world. And he has retired to his vineyard in France. Except there has been this referendum against synthetics, which they're meaning like data and, you know, androids, things like that, in which all synthetics and because they attacked this group of people. It's this long story. Anyway, so now he's on like this mission to I don't want to give the whole thing away, but it's very, very good. He's amazing, of course. And so he's carrying the whole thing. And I thoroughly have enjoyed it. In fact, I'm treating it like a fine wine. You know what I mean? I'm not like downing the whole thing at once. I mean, I don't drink wine. I would assume that's how you do it. But I'm really taking my time with it. Instead of, I didn't want to burn straight through it. So I've only watched three episodes, but so far I really enjoy it. So I would highly encourage anybody who is
CBS
interested.
Access.
All right.
Yeah,
all
CBS
right.
All Access, Picard.
Okay. Amy, what is your Netflix suggestion of the week?
Well, you told me it didn't have to be on Netflix, right?
It does not.
I do love my Netflix. And so if I had to do that, I would agree with the Tiger King thing. But mine is on Travel Channel. And there's a series called The Alaska Triangle.
Yes, I know.
I think it was the second one that came out. It's called The Hairy Man of Port Chatham.
Okay.
Alaska. And oh my gosh, I was supposed to be going there this year. Like everything Bigfoot has been canceled this year, and I don't know what I'm going to do with myself because it's like I could be a normal person again because like I'm always busy traveling somewhere. So I'm going to get there someday, though. But it's this island. Well, not an island, but it's this part of Alaska where you have to charter a boat to get to it. Kind of like what you were saying, you know, on that, the one Monster Quest. And there's this hairy man. There used to be a fishing village there that they would had a cannery last century. And everybody left because they said the hairy man was killing people. So some of my friends in Extreme Expeditions Northwest, there was Larry Beans Baxter and Steven and Adam. They went and they did this thing for the Travel Channel, and it is cool. And they have some cool footage on there. So
yeah, I saw that. It actually is fascinating. Good. Well, the whole Alaska Triangle series is great.
Yeah, I love that.
And Bigfoot, way ahead of the curve on social distancing. I mean,
he
was doing it before it was cool, you know?
Yes. And if you want to watch that thing that scared me when I was 7 years old, you can see that on Amazon.
What's it called?
I think now they just call it Sasquatch, but in the like subtitle thing, it's Sasquatch, the Legend of Bigfoot. And okay. It's the hokiest, dumbest thing, but it scared the poop out of me.
It's kind of like the Legend of Bogey Creek, right?
Yeah, but it's stupider. But it's still
stupider.
That's not a word. Stupider. No, I like the Legend of Bogey Creek, but it did. Like, I want to watch it again because I just remember how much it scared me.
Gotcha. Well, Amy, thank you for your time. We appreciate it. And
you're welcome.
Feel free to share our show with whoever you would like.
Yeah.
Sure will.
We're growing our audience. We have 20,000 plus people download it.
That's what the internet says.
Well, the internet says, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, you know, kind of a big deal.
Yeah. Can I say my email?
Please.
Anything
you want to say.
Yeah.
It's really hard to remember. It's BigfootAmy@gmail.com.
Okay.
So if you have a Bigfoot sighting...
Or specifically, you're looking for scientists.
Well, for Project Zoo Book, but I'm not a scientist. I'm not even a science teacher. I'm learning all this stuff. But if there are any that would like to talk to us, but I love Bigfoot researchers and other stories too.
Gotcha. BigfootAmy@gmail.com.
Yeah, AMY. Yeah.
How did it, when you typed that one in, you had to be like very excited that it was still available.
Yes, got it.
Exactly. I wasn't really surprised though.
I have to go to the numbers. All right. Well, it was really nice meeting you, Amy. Thank you for taking your time out and talking to two idiots like us.
You're welcome. And if your youth group ever wants to go Bigfooting, we should go. I'll bring my stuff.
Absolutely. We will make it happen. Fine. Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks
Amy.
So much, guys.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Okay. She's gone.
There it is. I was nice.
You were nice. I'm thankful.
Okay. I was.
Thank you for being nice.
I don't want to be a jerk.
It just comes so naturally.
I guess.
Well, but it's hard when you don't believe in something.
Yeah, it is. It is. And, you know, I mean, the Bigfoot, what the Bigfoot community kind of reminds me of the comic book community. You know what I mean? They're a little, in the sense that they're a little obsessive. It's almost a little dorky, you know, but they're very kind of tight with one another. And they gather around this thing that we're kind of in on that nobody else is in on. It's a club and it's
a lot like church.
It's community.
Right.
Some would say there's a pretty big difference between those things. So, you know, so
just a group of people gathering together.
You know what I mean? And it gets people outside and, you know, like loving nature. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
So I'm glad that they're having fun and enjoying it.
I don't consider myself part of the Bigfoot community.
Yeah, okay.
I'm a Bigfoot enthusiast.
Yeah, I would say
I enjoy
so.
Watching stuff.
Uh-huh.
I enjoy going out camping.
Yeah.
And,
I think almost it's the TV shows that really throw me off. Like when I've tried to watch them, it almost makes me less believe in it because it's a bit like, I don't know, this is just a bit.
I do feel like they trump it up a little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where I'm looking for, you know, I will
there's some like legit documentaries, standalone.
I wish I could remember the guy because she would have known who he was. But Eric Metaxas is this author that I like, and he's got a podcast. He's got a radio show. That's the Eric Metaxas Show. And he interviewed a Bigfoot guy.
Okay.
And for like half an hour, talked to him about Bigfoot and all this. And that was the moment, I will say, that was the, if I ever came the closest to believing,
it was
in the middle of that. Cause I thought, man,
do you know who it was?
I might be able to
Jeff
look
Meldrum?
It up.
I mean, he's like one of the
I might be able to look it up, but I tell you, the guy was very reasonable. And Eric Metaxas is a, you know, intellectual. He's an author, you know, on right. He's not, you know, but he is open to things. And so if I can figure it out, I'll let you know who it was. But I don't exactly know. But I will say that when I was listening to it, to him, I started to open up the chance that it was okay. possible.
I do think this, whenever we actually do capture him on video,
uh-huh.
like legit, like yeah. indisputable, I think it's going to be on a show that isn't a Finding Bigfoot show.
No, it'll be 2020 or, you know, or I mean, it'll be like, headline news.
Like, no, I think it'll be something like the History Channel alone. Like the guy's filming his camp. Yeah, he's like making tools mm-hmm. and all of a sudden like Bigfoot crashes the camp.
Yeah.
Something like that. I think it's going to be a separate, you know, man versus wild, Survivor Man, some well, separate listen, show.
I hope that it happens. I really do. Until I just feel like so many people, smart people have tried so hard to get anything, and I just, you know, a little bit of hair, some footprints, some grainy footage. It's just not enough for me. But
DNA evidence.
Okay, yeah.
That's something.
But I don't know. I mean, it's DNA.
Scientists.
Yeah, well, you know how I feel about scientists. So.
Well, this was a good episode. Honestly, Bigfoot and coffee are two of my top five things.
Two of your top five things? Yeah, what coffee. Are the other three?
Like family, God, and... Netflix.
What are my top five things?
So to me, family, God, Netflix, not mm-hmm. in any order, family, mm-hmm. God, Netflix, Bigfoot, and coffee.
Okay. My top five things would be coffee, not in any specific
yeah,
order.
No.
I'll say coffee. Let's see. sugar.
Okay.
Just yeah. any kind of sugar.
Any sugar, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Books.
Okay.
Television.
You're missing family and God.
And, well, hold on. Okay. I only have one more?
Yeah.
Probably my youngest daughter. That would probably be my top five things.
Is she the one that listens to the show?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
That's why I like her the most. She actually listens to the show. Well, Jason, that's a show.
It is.
You feel good about it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't want to do every show like this.
What, interviews?
I don't know. I mean, research the paranormal, you know.
I don't want to become a paranormal
I don't want
show.
To become that.
Champ, Nessie, Bigfoot,
I know that there's
aliens,
more to
UFOs.
Talk about. I get it. But I'm just no thank you.
I love all of that stuff.
I know you do. All right. Well... Until next time,
mm-hmm.
this is Dan signing off for Jason, reminding you to always keep your stick on the ice and never wear the blue sweats.
Sit, boo-boo, sit. Good dog.
I have spoken.